The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. This episode contains explicit content, including descriptions of sexual assault, physical abuse, and abortion. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
I developed very fast. I felt like I almost went from being a little girl to being a young woman who was leered at and gawked at. I felt like I couldn't really trust any man, especially from the messages that I was receiving at home, which was, you can't trust anyone. Men are only out for one thing. I had just turned 18. They became abusive. He actually picked me up by my neck and under my arm and threw me across the room. You never knew what kind of person you were going to get with him. He was much older than I was. There's no way that I'm going to get pregnant. And that's exactly what happened. He did not make a mistake. He did not forget that he intentionally did what he did to keep me trapped. I actually broke up with him. I thought maybe this is a fresh start for me. So one night I finally came clean and I said, I need to talk to you about what happened a few months ago in my previous relationship. And then he ended up breaking up with me and he said, I don't think you should have ever told me about the abortion. A few months later, I got a phone call from the father of the baby, from my previous boyfriend. He broke into the house in the middle of the night. He walked into my bedroom, scared the hell out of me. And then in the morning when I woke up, he was gone and he had left me this incredibly creepy note that said, amongst other things, I just wanted to watch you sleep. Why don't you come with me? He sucked me right back into a relationship with him. That was his way of getting me away from everything that I knew, my job, my friends, my hometown, any connection that I had to anyone, to get me alone in a new state to isolate me.
As a young girl, Lynn physically matured early, which drew unwanted attention from men and subjected her to harassment, crude remarks, and uncomfortable encounters. At home, her father's secret gambling problem, which had begun in his late teens, created an undercurrent of tension within the family, despite the outward appearance of a thriving and stable household. Her father and brother took steps to shield her from the outside world, especially when it came to interactions with the opposite sex. But Lynn soon realized that this protection was more restrictive than supportive, leaving her ill-prepared for the realities of relationships. With independence came the stark reality that she was truly on her own, forced to make difficult choices about her body, her future, and exposed her to heartbreak, betrayal, gut-wrenching decisions, and violence.
So my father was always incredibly overprotective. And I think that it was a combination of me being female and me being the youngest. He felt this need to shelter me as long as possible from the dangers of the outside world, from boys. And in my early teen years, when I started to notice boys and boys started to notice me, I noticed a very big shift in my brother's behavior where he would start saying things to me like, everyone is going to take advantage of you. No one is good enough for you. I was 12 years old. And so I looked very much like a little girl. And I was walking into our local park one day, and I think I was on my way to cross-country running practice. And I was approached by a bunch of football players. And they looked to be about maybe 14 or 15. So a few years older than I was. And one of them said to me, hey, how old are you? And I replied, 12. And he said, do you put out? And I didn't even really quite understand what he meant because I was so in shock for the first few seconds that I just kind of gave him this confused, sort of offended look. But I didn't say anything. And then a few moments later, coming down the same hill after this group had left, was my brother. And I realized that my brother is on the same football team as this group of boys. It's the JV football team of my local high school. And my brother immediately says, what did that guy say to you? And I told him. And he said, okay, I'll take care of it. And I didn't really know what that meant, but I thought, well, he's probably going to go into the locker room and have a talk with this guy and say, that was my younger sister. Later on at night, while we were setting the table for dinner, I said to my brother, hey, whatever happened with that guy? And my brother shot me this look like he was so angry at me. And the look was meant to keep my mouth shut. And I think that was a pivotal point because I learned then that it was better to keep things quiet and out of the view of adults than to raise my voice and hold someone accountable when they do something wrong. There was a very big change from the age of maybe 14 through 16. And instead of going to looking like a normal 14 to 16-year-old, I looked much older. And I developed very fast. I felt like it happened overnight. I felt like I almost went from being a little girl to being a woman, or a young woman, I should say, who was leered at and gawked at and comments were thrown at. And I was now being approached by older men, men out of high school in their 20s. And it became inappropriate. When I entered high school, the most disturbing thing that I noticed were the looks from male teachers. And that was really disturbing. I lived very close to New York City at the time. And so even though we weren't old enough to drink, sometimes we would still venture into the city. And hearing things screamed at me from cars, by men on the street, having men try to reach out and touch me, and even just going to, let's say, a mall, it would be happening there as well. I felt like I couldn't really trust any man, or maybe anyone for that matter, especially from the messages that I was receiving at home, which was, you can't trust anyone. Men are only out for one thing. Even an older friend of my father's or a teacher at my school. The first boyfriend that I ever had, I was 15 and he was 18. He was a little bit old for his grade, and I'd say I was a little bit on the younger side. I was a sophomore, and he was a senior, and he didn't go to my high school. He went to a private school a couple towns away, and we were introduced through a mutual friend, and we hit it off right away. We did argue a whole lot because I think I was trying to navigate what it was like to have a boyfriend and also to have one who I didn't get to see a whole lot. Maybe we would get together on weekends, but it's not like I could see him every day at school. He had a very active life as well. I mean, not only was he going to school, but he was also in ROTC and he had one or two part-time jobs because he was helping out his family. So he didn't have all this free time just to kind of like hang out at my house with me. Before I had entered that relationship, I had not done anything with a boy besides kissing. I felt like I was extremely inexperienced because it seemed like all of my friends had done way more than I had. Some of them had even had sex at that point, and that was like the furthest thing from my mind. I thought, there's absolutely no way that I'm going to engage in sexual behavior at this age. You know, I need to be much older. But he never pressured me to do anything that I didn't want to do. I actually brought him home to introduce him to the family. And oddly enough, they didn't seem to have a lot of concerns about his age once they realized that he was still in high school, that the relationship seemed to be on the up and up. They felt a certain level of trust about him. He was very respectful when he came over. There were very specific rules set once I became old enough and I got a driver's license. They did not want me driving out to see him. And it was also, you can't be in your room alone with him with the door closed. Right about when I was ready to graduate high school, I got a job at a movie theater and I started to notice that I had feelings for a coworker of mine. And if I'm having these feelings and I'm attracted to another man, then that means that I need to cut things off with this person. I didn't really tell him about the other guy at first. There were sort of other issues in the relationship. I think the fact that I was getting close to graduating, that I knew that I was going to be going off to college. He just had a whole lot more things in his schedule. He was focusing on his studies. He was doing internships. He was trying to make the best for himself. But I think we almost just kind of started to drift apart. And so I tried to end things as softly as I could, but he actually started to cry. And I remember sitting there being so shocked because I never thought that I really mattered all that much to him. And when he started to cry and he said, "I don't want to lose you," I think my response was something like, "I didn't even know that you really cared about me that much." At the end of high school, I had just turned 18. I started dating my coworker at the movie theater. And this was the summer before we were both about to go in completely different directions. So he would have been headed to boot camp in the military, and I was headed off to college. And so there wasn't a whole lot of responsibilities outside of working in a movie theater. So we spent a lot of our time together, and we also hung out at the movie theater, and things were good to start. But I started to realize that his family was very toxic, that there was emotional and psychological abuse going on at home in his house. There was a lot of arguing. There was a lot of emotional instability on his part. That was my first experience with a relationship that was very toxic and unhealthy. And they became abusive. I was at his house and he had gotten into an argument with his family in front of me, and they spoke Spanish, so I couldn't entirely understand what they were talking about, but I knew that they were yelling at him and he was yelling back at them. And there had been some comments made about how they didn't like me very much. His mother didn't like me. She didn't like how close he and I were becoming so fast. And during the argument, he locked himself in the bathroom and then ended up punching a hole through the bathroom door. And I was so frightened, I left his house very quickly. It sort of escalated from there. There was one point in the relationship where he choked me. He actually picked me up by my neck and under my arm and threw me across the room. He just was very emotionally unstable. you never knew what kind of person you were going to get with him. I think sometimes he could be quite romantic, and other times he would fly into a rage and he would be very nasty to me, and he would be very belittling in front of my friends, and he would be sort of gruff and rude to my friends if we were hanging out in a group. And it started to feel like I couldn't bring him around anyone. So after this summer that we had together, he was going off to boot camp and I was going off to college. This was like right before 2000. The only way to communicate was maybe I would get a phone call from him or we would write letters. But as the relationship went on, I think the distance started to become a real problem. Boot camp was about 3 months. And then I realized that he's about to go on something that they call float, which means that he's going on a ship that's going around to different countries and he'll be gone for months. I realized that I was depriving myself of like a real college experience. I felt guilty if I even talked to another man or if another man found me attractive, because I felt like, oh, I have this boyfriend and this poor guy, he's stuck in the military and he didn't really want to be there and he's miserable and he's away from his family and he's away from me. And so there was all this internal guilt. About 2 to 2.5 years after we had initially met, we officially broke up. I still felt like things were unfinished. Some part of my heart really didn't want to fully let him go. I was 20 at this time. I was set up with someone, my best friend. She was actually dating his younger brother. And so I thought, well, if she feels safe enough to date the younger brother, certainly I should feel safe enough to date the older brother. And this could be a really good thing. We could go on a lot of double dates. It'll bring us even closer as friends. He was a man who was much older than I was. So I was 20 at the time, and he was 27. My first thought was, this is going to be a complete game changer for me. Finally, I'm dating someone who is more mature, who's established, who has traveled and lived a life and has a career and is going to treat me like a woman. He was very interested in me emotionally. However, he said he didn't want to use condoms. He said that he didn't like them. That makes me very nervous, but I'm on the pill at the time. And I'm like, okay, if I'm just really religious about taking the pill and I know that I can count on this person to take care of me if anything happens, and that's even farther than I ever thought. My thinking was nothing is going to happen. Because this person wants to be in a relationship with me. He seems to take relationships very seriously. He's been engaged before. And so I know that he's not going to cheat on me. He's not going to put me at risk for STDs, and that there's no way that I'm going to get pregnant. And about 4 to 5 months into the relationship, that's exactly what happened. I had gone into my annual checkup with my gynecologist. And she said to me, are you still on the pill? And I said, yes, I take it every day. And she said, well, there's actually something new on the market, and it's a birth control patch that you can stick on. And it stays on for about, I think it was a week at a time. And you don't have to worry about taking the pill every day. And you can shower with this patch on and it won't come off. And it's really great for like a young woman like yourself on the go. And I thought, okay, well, this sounds great. I mean, let's do it. And so I put the patch on and I head off to Aruba on vacation with a friend, and I go into the ocean and the patch immediately comes off. And I'm thinking, okay, well, perhaps people have tested this patch in the shower, but perhaps they've never tested it in ocean water. So now I'm freaking out a little bit, but my boyfriend at that time, he's not on the vacation with me. So I come home about a week later from the vacation. And he is having this huge barbecue at his house with his whole family. Everyone is drinking excessively. I mean, like his mom is like throwing up in the bushes. He can barely stand. They're just so intoxicated. And I walk in and he's just so happy to see me. And he's sort of like groping all over me. And I pull him aside and I say, there's something we really need to talk about. The patch that was supposed to be so great fell off in the ocean when I was in Aruba. and we have to be really, really, really careful. And he kind of like yesed me to death and said, okay, okay, we will be. Don't worry about it. And so later that night, we're being intimate. And I'd say a stupid move on my part was to not insist that he used a condom. He kept promising me that he was going to pull out. And so that was the agreement, was that we were going to have sex, that we were okay with taking the risk, but that he was going to pull out. And the entire time we're having sex, and this is a 20-year-old girl having sex with a 27-year-old man, constantly reminding him, don't forget, you need to pull out. Remember, you said you're going to pull out. And I'm reminding him and reminding him over and over again. And he's like, yeah, yeah, no, I said I was going to. Like, stop talking. And it comes to the end and he did not pull out. And my immediate reaction was shock and betrayal. And I said to him, what did you just do? And he said, oh, I'm really sorry. I forgot I was drunk. And at this point, I am freaking out because I have just turned 21. I don't know if I'm pregnant. I'm so afraid at this point to even buy a pregnancy test. But of course, a couple weeks go by, I don't get my period, and I go to the store, I take the test, and it's positive. And I call him up on the phone and I say, I'm pretty sure that I'm pregnant. The test is positive. And his response is, great, let's just get married. I was so in shock because I was like, what are you talking about? We've been dating for maybe 4 or 5 months. You don't know me well enough to say that you want to be married to me. And I don't know you like that either. We're not ready for that kind of a step. And we're not ready to have a child together. I'm 20 years old. I'm 21 years old. I am in the middle of college. I don't have my own health insurance. I don't have a career. I don't have a steady job. And his response to everything that I'm saying is just, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. He wanted me pregnant. He did not make a mistake, that he did not forget, that he intentionally did what he did to keep me trapped with the hopes that I would not terminate the pregnancy. I had to make a very, very tough decision. I knew what I had to do. I knew that I was in no way ready to be a mother. And the fact that he had reacted in such a shocking and controlling way sort of solidified it for me that I needed to have an abortion. And so I reached out to a Planned Parenthood and they brought me in and they gave me another pregnancy test and that test came up positive. And they said, judging by your last period, we think you're about 7 weeks along. So there's two ways that we can handle this. You can go ahead and take the abortion pill. You can take it at home. You can be comfortable. There'll be some pain involved. But one drawback to the pill is that sometimes the abortion is not complete and you have to have the surgery anyway. And the other option was just to go ahead and have the D&C. And so I said, you know, I don't really want to go through more than I have to. And I don't really want to go through this at home where my parents might figure out what's going on. So I opted to have the abortion at an abortion clinic. The man that I was with at the time, the father of the baby, refused to drive me to the clinic. He didn't agree with my decision. And therefore, he was going to make it as difficult as possible for me to get the help that I needed. He also refused to pay for the abortion. At the time, it cost about $400. And the abortion clinic only accepted cash. And because I was a bartender at the time, outside of going to college, that was the only reason that I was able to come up with that type of cash. Otherwise, I don't know what I would have done because I'm not sure who I would have asked. I was too embarrassed to ask my parents. I was too embarrassed to tell anyone initially. And so the only person that I told was the best friend of mine. And she's the one who ended up driving me to and from the clinic. Things became much more abusive. Everything kicked up. He decided to hold me responsible and blame me and seem to take any responsibility away from himself for what had happened. His view was that because I had chosen to terminate the pregnancy, that meant that I didn't love him. And so he decided to punish me any way that he could. Verbal abuse, emotional abuse, blatant disrespect. It became pretty awful. So at some point, this was not long after the abortion, it became so unbearable to be around him that I actually broke up with him. I don't even know if I could really fairly say that I broke up with him, because he looked at me one night and just said, "Do you love me anymore?" And I was so depressed and so full of guilt and dealing with all of the grief that I said, "I don't know. I don't know if I love you anymore." And without any more words, he walked away and left. I was entering a classical music performance program in a local college. So I focused on that. I said, look, I have to get on with my life. It wasn't very easy. I was really emotionally distraught those few months, but I just tried to focus on school and work as much as I could. I eventually started dating someone. Once again, it was through a mutual friend. She had a very big crush on this guy, and she always talked about how he was so attractive and tall and that she really wanted me to date him. And I thought, well, that's a little bit weird. So she fixed us up and we went out to dinner one night, and he seemed very proper. He was respectful to my parents. He came and picked me up at the house and introduced himself. He was very tall and very handsome, and he had a good job. I think he was some sort of accountant. Things seemed to be going well. I thought maybe this is a fresh start for me, but I wasn't fully emotionally healed from what happened. And I think that he could tell that there was something going on. And so one night I finally came clean and I said, I need to talk to you about what happened a few months ago in my previous relationship. And I told him everything from the night of what happened to the abortion to the breakup. His response initially was that he sort of didn't say anything. And then he ended up breaking up with me. And he said, I don't think you should have ever told me about the abortion. So he basically asked me to put my trust in him and to lean on him. And once I did, he basically betrayed me and turned his back on me. It was awful. The night that he broke up with me, he took me to a public place. He took me to a coffee shop, and sitting there with him, and I was like, I cannot actually believe that you were doing this here in a coffee shop. Were you afraid that I was going to make a scene and that's why you did this in public? And he didn't answer. And I was like, I really thought this was beneath you. You didn't really have to worry about me making a scene. You could have very easily sat down with me somewhere private and had this conversation. And I was very disgusted, and I tried to leave the coffee shop and walk home, and he insisted on driving me home. And when we got in front of my house, just being ready to go inside and ready to be like, look, I can't believe I put my trust in you and you did this to me. And instead, he was crying. He was like blubbering like a baby. And he was like, I really don't want to do this. And I was like, well, then don't. I mean, you're breaking up with me in a coffee shop on one hand, and you're judging me for a really difficult decision that I had to make as a young kid. And then in the next second, you're crying in front of my house telling me that you don't want to break up with me. So what is it that I don't understand what you want? And in the end, we just broke up because I was like, I don't understand you. Clearly, you feel some kind of turmoil about doing this, but yet you still want to judge me enough to do it. So go away, you know? And so we ended up breaking up. A few months later, I got a phone call from the father of the baby, from my previous boyfriend. And he sucked me right back into a relationship with him. Every time I managed to break up with him, he would call me in the middle of the night, oftentimes inebriated, beg me to get back together with him. He would park his car in front of my house to watch me exit and enter the house to make sure that I wasn't with another guy. I was living alone. I had moved out of my parents' house and I was renting a house. He broke into the house in the middle of the night. He walked into my bedroom, scared the hell out of me because I was completely asleep. And then in the morning when I woke up, he was gone. And he had left me this incredibly creepy note that said, amongst other things, I just wanted to watch you sleep. And when I called up a friend and said, you know, something really disturbing happened last night, her response was so disappointing. She basically said, you know, I don't think it's all that serious. I think you're making it more of a big deal than it is. If you go to the cops, you're just going to end up ruining his life. And to be honest, I think that the note that he left you shows that he's kind of sweet and that he didn't really mean to hurt you, that he had no intention of hurting you when he broke in. Around that time that he had broken into my house, he had also gotten fired from his job for verbally accosting a female coworker. He managed to make himself seem like the victim. He made it seem like everyone in this place has it out for me. This woman had it out for me and I was unjustly vilified. And he had ended up reaching out to a recruiter and the recruiter had gotten him a new job out of state. And so he asked me to move away with him and to get a fresh start. And I said to him, how is this going to be a fresh start for us? Are we going to get married? Well, I'm not sure about that, but why don't you come with me? Of course, that was his way of getting me away from everything that I knew, my job, my friends, my hometown, any connection that I had to anyone, to get me alone in a new state to isolate me. And shortly after we arrived there, I got pregnant for a second time by him. And he was immediately thinking, well, of course, we're going to keep the baby this time because all of the issues that we had the first time, your concern about not having a career or a job or being old enough or any of that, those are not concerns anymore. So there's no question in his mind that we're going to keep this baby. But I had known from all the relationship issues and all the abuse that I didn't want to put a child through that. He had made a lot of comments as well that if I ever left him, that he would take the child from me. And so I knew that I needed to move forward by terminating the pregnancy. At least this time, he did drive me to the clinic. Once again, he didn't pay for the abortion. And then things got even worse after that. And so we started arguing so much that things escalated to the point one day where he threatened me and told me to get out of the house before he got home from work. I had a dog that had been with me for years, and she was sort of my lifeline, I guess. And so she was the very first thing that I put in the car. And so I put her in the car and I packed up a few other things and I called my parents, who were living about 6 hours away. And I said, I need to come stay with you. And they said, okay, leave right now and don't go back. And so that was it. I ran away from him. That was the first time that I felt fully free from him. I was about 26 at this time. For a while after that, I think I just dated a little bit. It was like the first time ever that I had actually behaved like a single girl in her 20s. And I just kind of focused on my friends. And I had a really good group of friends at the time and who went out all the time. And so I was actually just able to go out and have fun and be free for a little bit. And right around 26, heading towards age 27, I was contacted online by a man who lived in the same city that I was living in. And he said that he had just come across my profile online and thought that I had some really interesting and funny things to say. He was also older. He was about 7 years older as well. So about 33. And I wasn't totally sure that I was attracted to him at first, but I sort of gave him a chance. And it seemed like our personalities clicked because we were both originally from the Northeast and we were now currently living in the Bible Belt, and we connected on how different things are down here culturally than the way we grew up, and how the food is different and the people are different and it's less crowded and a slower way of life. And we seem to kind of get along. And so I thought, maybe I'll give this a shot and see how it goes. The first date, he made this very weird comment and I didn't quite know how to take it. And he said to me, I used to date women based solely on their physical appearance, but now I've changed that. And I was kind of like, I'm not quite sure how to take that. Are you trying to tell me that I'm ugly? Or are you trying to tell me that you see more in me besides the physical? And he was like, no, I'm just saying that I'm looking for maybe the whole package now. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And so we continued to hang out. But I could tell that he was definitely pushing for a serious relationship far more than I was. And a couple weeks in, he started going through my phone and asking me who every single male contact was in my phone and how I knew them. And then if I was on the computer, he was looking over my shoulder at what I was doing, specifically when I was checking my bank account, to ask me, what's this charge? What is this? Where were you? Why were you there? When were you there? One night we were out to dinner with his parents, and his mother had said something very off-putting to him. And his reaction was to slam the dishes together at the table in the middle of a crowded restaurant. And when I said to him, hey, this is really not the time or place to act like this. If you need to have an argument or a conversation with your mother, then it needs to happen privately. Then he lashed out at me in the middle of the restaurant. From then on, the belittling comments started to become kind of the norm. It turned into comments about my appearance. He started to make negative comments about my weight, which is interesting because he wasn't thin, but he started to compare me to a lot of his ex-girlfriends. He would constantly talk about how his ex-girlfriends were so attractive and that one of them looked like an actress and another one was a waitress at Hooters, and things just started to become really, really unhealthy and toxic. And I basically said to him, I don't really feel good about any of the things that have happened. And I had specifically pointed to that night when we were at dinner with his parents and he had made that big commotion. You know, I basically said, I don't want to be in a relationship with you anymore. So I broke up with him because I could see the red flags. I could see them for exactly what they were. And immediately after I broke up with him, some of the stalking type behavior started. We had only been together for maybe a couple of months before I broke up with him. But he started coming by my house unannounced. He started calling me constantly, texting me constantly. He would actually find my friends in town and then kind of corner them to sort of spill out this pitiful kind of story about how he was just so sad without me and that maybe if they could help him out and convince me to get back together with him. He would do things to members of my family as well. Like, he had become friendly with my older brother while we were dating, and then he would continue to hang out with my older brother and make comments about how he wished that he was back in a relationship with me and if maybe my brother could just talk some sense into me. I really felt like there was no escape. And I think he broke me down so much from so many different levels and so many different directions that I eventually agreed to get back together with him. And as many of these relationships go, we started out in that whole phase again where it's like you get back together and you have that sort of honeymoon phase where things are nice in the very beginning, and then the behavior just starts up all over again, and it increases and increases. And one day, I want to say about a year into the relationship, we were at his house and we were alone and we were being intimate. And so the act had started consensually, but somewhere in there, we were just kissing at this point. And I had whispered into his ear and asked him if he liked what I was doing. I thought that what I was saying was romantic. I thought that it was something normal that people say to each other when they're being close or being intimate. And something about that set him off. And so he spun me around and put his hand on the back of my head and sort of the, let's say like the top of my back, and twisted one of my arms behind my back. And he held me down like that, almost like a police officer would hold down someone who was under arrest, and then raped me. And I don't know how long it went on. I don't know how long the rape lasted. In my mind, it feels like it went on maybe for a minute, but it could have been much longer than that. I sort of blanked out, and I froze. I don't remember saying anything like, I don't remember telling him to stop, or saying no. I just remember it happening and it being violent. And then immediately when he was done, I quickly put my clothes on and I ran out of his house and got into my car and drove away as fast as I could. And as fast as I did that, he put his clothes on and got in his car and followed me. And he was right behind me on the road. And when I got to my house, I ran in and I shut the door and I locked it. And he came to my house and was pounding on the door, begging to be let in. And I told him to go away. And eventually he made it seem like he wanted to talk about what happened. So I let him in and we sat down on the couch. And I thought maybe that he was going to say he was sorry, or I don't know, maybe he was going to beg for my forgiveness. And I looked at him and I said, "You raped me." And he sort of scoffed. And he said, "I didn't rape you. You wanted it." And I remember going to work the next day. And I worked at a law firm at the time. So the lawyer that I worked for was not a criminal lawyer. I worked in corporate law at the time. But I remember going into work, being very out of sorts, feeling like what had happened was almost a dream. And I went to my boss. I told her what happened. And I remember being kind of disappointed because she had this reaction, like this sort of guttural reaction to what had happened. But at no point did she ever say to me, "Lynn, you need to go to the police." So I started to tell myself that maybe it wasn't really rape. Maybe because it had all started consensually, that it would turn into a he said, she said situation if I had reported it. I've seen what happens to so many women who have to testify in sexual assault trials. They put them on the stand. They dig into their background. They bring up their sexual past. In no way did I think that I was emotionally capable of potentially going to law enforcement and being treated like dirt, or being treated like dirt by a defense attorney in a courtroom. And I think as time went on, I just learned to bury it. I was less of a person. I think every single time these things happened to me, it sort of chipped away a little bit more. I think at one point in my life, I was this really outgoing person. I've always had people tell me you can be very charismatic and you can be very funny and witty. But I think every time one of these things happened, it chipped away at that a little bit, and a little bit more and a little bit more over time. So I started to become like this frail person who avoided public situations because I almost felt like people could smell it on me. Like people could sense that I was easy to victimize. So I would just avoid people. I became very socially anxious. I started to become sort of an avoidant personality. I was still doing okay in terms of my career. Like, I could still hold down a job. I could still go to work. I could still talk with my coworkers, but there was severe damage done there. Once I was able to finally break free from that last abusive relationship, I did eventually move on to other things. I experienced a very bad relationship in the middle there that lasted a number of years. But eventually, I ended up meeting my current husband. We were both contractors on this legal project, and they stuck us next to each other to kind of learn the process and learn this software. And I thought that he was just very nice at first. I was just like, oh, it just seems like such a nice guy. And we got to know each other, but we were really just kind of friends. And then years later, we were able to reconnect. And at first, we were still kind of just picked up where we left off, and we were still friends. And he was just really kind of a gentle, understanding ear. We would go for coffee, and he would just listen to me talk about things that I had been through. And it, over time, became more than a friendship. And I realized that there were really, really deep feelings there, and that he was probably the most understanding, patient, and kind person that I had ever been around, especially from a relationship perspective. And I was perfectly content with us never getting married. It wasn't something that I even needed. I was just so happy that he was in my life. I was like, if things even stay like this until I die, that would be enough for me, that this man has given me so much of myself back and so much support that if we stayed like this, great. But he did end up surprising me and proposing in late 2018. And I said, yes, obviously. And we got married and we had a son. And things have been really wonderful, really wonderful. I don't think I understood true intimacy, what it was like to truly be vulnerable with someone until I met my husband. And I am married to a good man now, and I'm very grateful to my husband. He's a wonderful partner and a wonderful father. And we feel the same on so many levels. And that is that we are here to break any generational trauma that we grew up with. And we work on ourselves so hard so that we don't ever bring any of that onto our kids. We want them to have the absolute best start possible.
I asked Lynn if she took any time or steps to focus on healing between relationships.
Sadly, I don't think I did any proper steps of recovery. When I got to this new state, and I was living with my parents and I got settled and I got a job and I kind of started over. I got a good group of friends and kind of began this new life. I kept telling myself, don't get into a relationship. Whatever you do, just be a girl in your 20s for once. Don't jump into another relationship with another guy because it is going to go south. You're not ready. You're not healed. And of course, a couple weeks within me being there, I was approached by this man, this real estate agent, and I was a little apprehensive. And I told him that I had just gotten out of a terrible relationship and that I was starting fresh. And he sort of swooped in and wanted to take things up to a very serious notch very quickly. And then I found out that he was actually still married to his ex-wife, that they were legally separated, that he lied to me about when the marriage was finally going to be dissolved, so when the divorce was going to be final. He lied to me about seeing other women. I found out that he was sleeping with other girls behind my back. And all of this happened like in a matter of weeks. Like, it was very fast and furious. So that for me, again, was just like another sign of betrayal. It was like a relationship that I didn't even want to be in. I wanted to relax. I wanted to be left alone. And this man approached me in a bar and wanted to buy me a drink and wanted to talk and asked me to be his girlfriend and wanted to take me away on weekend trips and all these things. And he was not at all what he appeared to be. I never told him about the abortion, but he judged me for not being religious, because I guess that was something that was very important to him, which is interesting because I think so many people put themselves out there as these pious individuals because they go to church on Sundays, and deep down they live their lives with such deceit in their heart. It's so confusing to me.
I also asked her to reflect on times when she wasn't believed after sharing her story and whether she's been able to share her experiences of surviving this with her family.
It's basically like being victimized all over again. When you get the strength up to tell the story and you're confronted in a negative way, not believed or victim blamed. Oddly enough, a few months ago, I decided to come clean to my family about what had happened with this person, about the sexual assault. And I don't know what in my head made me think now is the time to do it. But I just felt like I have to do it, and I have to do it quickly, and I have to do it now. And so I ended up sending a text. I don't know if that was the best way to do it, but I felt like I almost couldn't get the words out. It's almost harder for me at times to tell people that are close to me as opposed to telling a complete stranger. There's like a level of intimacy there. And so I sent a text message to my father and my older brother and my mother. And I basically told them about the sexual assault. And I got three very different reactions. My mother was supportive and heartbroken. And she called me later on that night. And we spoke for like 3 hours on the phone. And, you know, I learned a lot about her. And she asked me a lot about me and everything I had been through. And at the end of the conversation, she said something so amazing, which was, "Lynn, we can talk about this as much as you want, whenever you want." And I thought that was so wonderful of her to say that to me. The reaction from my father, he basically went catatonic for a few days, according to my mother. He really went into some sort of shock. I don't think he was emotionally capable of processing it. When he was finally able to talk to me, which was about a week after I had told him, he called me up on the phone. And all he could say was, it was almost like robotic. Like all he could say was, "I'm really sorry it happened, but I didn't know. I'm really sorry it happened, but I didn't know." And he just kept repeating that. And then he said something so awful. He said, "You know, that guy and your brother, they're still friends. And that guy has actually been really good to your brother." And that guy, meaning my rapist. So he basically said, "Your rapist has been really great to your brother." And I thought, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. Because you're telling me that you're sorry that it happened. And in the next minute, you're telling me that in somehow I should forgive him for violating everything that I am because he's been a good buddy to my older brother. And to this day, I don't really have the same type of relationship with my father. It's not much of one. It's very distant. He speaks to my kids because I don't want to completely pull him out of my children's life. Because oddly enough, I know that he's made so many mistakes as a father, but as a grandfather, he's pretty good to my kids. He is almost all the things that I wish that he was as a dad. He's warm and funny and affectionate and kind. It's good to see him like that. I just wish he would have been like that with us, with me and my siblings. By far, the most awful response was that of my older brother, who responded with what I could only describe as like vitriol word salad. It was like, "Why are you doing this? Why are you telling me this now? Why would you bring this up 15 years later? You're happy now. You're in a marriage with a good man. You have a good life. Why are you focusing on the past? He made a few comments as to that the Me Too movement was bullshit. It was pretty awful. And my response to that was I just said, okay, we're done. And I didn't mean at the time, we're done as brother and sister. I just meant, we're done with this conversation. Like, I refuse to listen to that. And his response back to me was, fuck you. And so I still haven't spoken to my brother. I'm not sure what type of relationship we're going to have going forward. And it's a bit of the same there. I mean, my brother has children and I want to remain close with his kids. I care about them and I love them. And on some level, I love my brother too. You know, I can't erase years of having love for my brother by this awful reaction that he had, as much as it hurts me. But at the same time, I have so much more respect for myself now than I did years ago. And I feel like if I very easily just mull over what he said and excuse it so easily, that it erases all this work that I've done on myself.
I praised her for her strength and bravery in sharing with her family. And if after all these years, she felt like she was protecting them by not sharing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's true what you said. I felt for many years that by not telling my parents about these things, by not disclosing the abuse and the sexual assault and all the other things, I felt like in a way that I was protecting them. You know, like I can't let something that I know is going to be so hurtful for them come out, especially maybe nearing the end of their lives. My parents are in no way super sick right now. They're not on their deathbeds, but at the age that they're at, I don't know how much time we really have. And so I felt like I was protecting them, like almost like, let them go peacefully. Let them just live in peace and enjoy their retirement. And I really did a disservice to myself in that sense, because parents are really here to protect their kids and not the other way around.
And then what advice would she give to her children if they go through similar situations to what she experienced?
I would tell my children that if you think that something is inappropriate, if it feels wrong, then it probably is wrong. It's not just all in your head. And that you don't ever have to feel like you need to keep that inside. You're not on this earth to protect me. I'm here on this earth to protect you. And so if things are ever going bad in a relationship, come home. Call me. If things are ever going bad at your job, call me. We'll figure it out. And it is 100% never your fault if someone treats you poorly. You can never know what someone is going through, really going through. People have this ability to give you a big smile and nod and laugh and pretend like things are fine. And they could be utterly dying on the inside. People feel like they have to put on a brave face to get through their day, whether it's for their job or for their kids or for whatever reason. But I encourage everyone out there who has experienced any type of abuse, whether it be emotional or physical, psychological, sexual, to find a good outlet. It took me many years to find a really good therapist. I mean, you can find any outlet. I have been a member of a lot of support groups in the past. Before I had my daughter, I suffered through several recurrent miscarriages. And I think one of the best things for me at that time was finding a support group and finding people who had been in similar situations as myself to talk to, because who can better understand what you're going through than someone who's been or is going through the exact same thing? So I know that it's hard, and I know that you feel like you may not be believed and that you may not have a way out, but I encourage you to try to talk to someone. You know, in many ways, I feel like we're going backwards in terms of women's rights, especially in the last several years. It's sort of heartbreaking to witness. But if you are someone who has the strength to share your story and to connect with others, I would highly recommend that you do that. It's not until, I'd say, the last year and a half that I've really found someone who was able to help me dive into this. The way that I was able to dive into it is by talking about it. And it's not easy. It's not easy to talk about. But I feel like every time I tell the story now, that I gain a little bit of myself.
And finally, what does her husband mean to her? And how does it feel to have found a supportive partner?
I wasn't sure how my husband was going to feel about it at first, but he did not disappoint. He was like, these are fantastic. I think you should keep doing this. He's like my biggest cheerleader. He's so supportive of me doing these podcasts. And that's just like an extra side bonus. I've met so many people who have been embarrassed of things that I've told them, like that I should be ashamed of my past. And he is the complete opposite. He's like, you're amazing and you're strong and you have my undying support. And it's been wonderful.
As Lynn struggled early in life with unwanted attention from men, she was bullied into silence, both at home and in her relationships, which may have contributed to her hesitance in reporting her assault. She placed her trust in men, but found herself repeatedly drawn into unhealthy dynamics. Instead of healing, she found herself jumping from one relationship to another, never fully recovering. Over time, she began to feel like an easy target, as though others would sense her vulnerability, leading her to withdraw from the social life she was once known for. When she finally revealed the secret she had carried for so long, she hoped to relieve the burden, but it only led to continued victimization from her father and brother, adding to the shame she already carried. Ultimately, Lynn's path to healing required breaking the cycle of generational trauma by becoming a mother and recognizing the importance of her children playing a crucial role in her recovery. With support of professional guidance, her mother, and the love of her supportive partner, she was able to recover her sense of self and begin her journey towards true healing. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating or relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer, the information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer.
Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.